So we're headed right now to the Crypto Investor Summit at the Ritz-Carlton, and actually the Security Token Summit today. Tomorrow is the Crypto Investor Summit out in LA. And what this event is all about is it's going to be broker-dealers, compliance, SEC, legal, probably about as opposite a crowd from Anarchapoco as you can get. But if you are into the world of finance and you don't know what a security token is, it's something that you're going to want to get yourself acquainted to sooner than later. So there's a whole bunch of things that you can do with cryptocurrency, especially in the world of finance. I think it's someday you're going to have all the stocks are going to be, digital. I mean, they almost already are anyways. I think they're all going to be represented by tokens. Those tokens you can trade instantaneously. They will settle immediately as opposed to having to wait 1 to 3 days like the current system. Just imagine, trying to move money around, like how long it takes right now and how expensive it is. In the future, that's going to be nearly free. The stock market, you're going to have different indexes where instead of owning an index, you're going to own all like 500 stocks at once because it's going to cost next to nothing to make those 500 trades. They're going to make it easy. I believe the term for that is direct indexing. There's just so many things that can be done that the average person just has really no idea or no real appreciation of what really can be done. And so that's why I'm going here, is to learn as much as I can about the Security Token Summit, about the security tokens themselves, and really kind of understanding some of the legal and compliance framework around that. So I know, and also so I can help shape that discussion as we're here early on at the ground floor. I mean, I'm not even sure how many of these conferences there's been that had a focus actually on security tokens. So it will be interesting to see what this looks like. But it is pretty early right now, 3:30 in the morning, headed out to LA, off to a very, very, very busy week. We're here at the Ritz-Carlton right now, just flew in from Phoenix and sitting here with an Uber driver who is going to remain anonymous right now, but we just hooked him up with an Edge wallet. So I don't know if you can just kind of show that we got hooked up with the Edge wallet. I'm gonna give our driver here some. So you see, actually, you just got $5 of Bitcoin Cash, and see, look how long that took, like a second. And so, anyways, but we're here at the Ritz-Carlton. Had a great ride. It's important that we don't hold it to ourselves, that we take especially people like Uber drivers, Lyft drivers, and help spread the message.
And compared to Bitcoin, it just feels a lot faster. Mm-hmm. So I know that when Satoshi pick the 10-minute block times, it's kind of just a guess, right? It's hard to say what's the optimal time. Mm-hmm. So for Litecoin, I decided to make it faster.
Got it. And so for those that don't know, explain the main differences between Bitcoin and Litecoin.
I mean, the main difference is that it's 4 times faster, so it's 2.5 minutes for block confirmations. Mm-hmm. And it has 4 times as many coins, and it uses a different proof of work. So the key things that I wanted to do when I created Litecoin was to just make it faster, and also make it so that it uses a different proof of work algorithm, so it's not competing with Bitcoin for miners. Because I realized it's hard to survive if you're competing with Bitcoin for miners. And I created Litecoin mainly just for fun, right? Just to add ground with the Bitcoin gold base and just launch something that I thought was better than all the other altcoins out there at that time.
Mm-hmm. And the reason why you were buying Bitcoin in Starbucks and McDonald's was basically because there was no infrastructure at that time, right?
Yeah, there was Mount Gox, right?
Never heard of it.
Awesome exchange. but you had to wire money to a bank.
If he ends up figuring out how to be okay with it, that could end up being a great thing. And they're all assets, so it's not just art, it could be real estate, any form of asset that could be broken into lots of small shares, I think has the potential to really benefit from being tokenized, put into Bitcoin or another kind of token.
Process in a retail or even like an insurance type of a sales mechanism. So we're shortening that to near real time. Our customers are shortening it to near real time. So that's the settlement and clearing process.
Okay, sometimes people say reconciliation, right?
Right, okay. Yeah, definitely. And all of this improves by...
of personal liberty and dignity and the kind of metadata protection where the consumer has sovereignty over their own information, control over their own keys. There is no effective way to have a middle ground. It's all about information. So either the information of everything about you is available to government or companies, or it's not. And there's only one way to make it not be available, and that is to protect it, in effect, yourself with your own software and with blockchain. Because, information has a way of, under a regime change or leaked out, and you never know when it's being improperly accessed. So the only rule of law is not going to do it, in my opinion. It needs to be, if it was illegal to misuse it, then why not just effectively protect it? Because finally, the technology is fully capable of allowing consumers to protect their own information. You know, when I wrote this,
is problematic because the SEC, in some cases, may be slow. In some cases, may interpret new technologies and new markets through a historic lens that just doesn't apply. Other times, they're hamstrung by legacy congressional acts that they have to work within, and they can't do things versus. Other countries like what we're seeing out of Singapore or even what we're seeing out of London.
In 1995, the internet Netscape moment, blah, blah, blah. And then there's also the people who come from finance, right? So I think sometimes there's a little bit of a valley in between where the people in the former group assume everybody understands what they're talking about, and people in the latter group assume everyone understands what they're talking about, and a lot of times terminology and actual fact gets lost in the middle.
I think there actually is something that's very meaningful in the framework, and that is this notion that a security can morph into something else. Because I've always thought there's always the offering, you can't get around that, and I don't think that there's anything that robusts that, but that it's really in doing a commercial sale. So the question is really, is the SEC trying to deal with the legacy issues from things that were pre-DAO? Or is the SEC coming up with this notion that a security can actually morph into something else?
The usability, specifically on the key management, specifically on how you back up and secure your keys, was as alienating and as intimidating as you could make it. It simply was not something I would recommend to anyone, not even technical people. Who it was for were for people, not necessarily technical or not technical, it was for people who were willing to jump through the hoops because they cared enough about crypto on an ideological level. And from the viewpoint of getting true adoption of crypto, I felt like we had to break past that. Get past just simply, okay, I'm ideologically aligned, so I'll jump through all the hoops. And so we created, at the time, called Airbits, was the original name of the company, the original Airbits wall, which was Bitcoin only, but it had the tech to be able to allow people to hold their own keys, be non-custodial, but still automatically encrypt and back up the private keys for Bitcoin without the user doing anything more than creating, username and password. And that's it. Replacing actual financial services that sit on top of money. Right? In our current world, we've got money, and we have financial services that are on top of money, such as loans, hedging, insurance. That's the part that I'm excited about next, and that's where I think dApps and smart contracts play a role. I don't think they're going to replace, they're not going to be the new internet. I'm not a big fan of the term Web3, in all honesty. The dApps have their place, and its most important value is taking financial services that have been restricted to highly fortunate, accessible individuals in developed countries, like insurance and loans, and making that now accessible globally to anyone that has a smartphone and an internet connection, and not needing to know how much money you have or any kind of KYC, are you in restricted countries. That to me is what I think projects like Augur and MakerDAO are really, really disrupting. And
do those other things, one of the ways to do that, in my understanding,
is you could borrow against your funds. So can you kind of explain a little bit more about how that process works?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So we started to, as a company, to fill that exact need. There was no option or opportunity for liquidity for holders of crypto assets that wanted to hold and not sell. And since it wasn't recognized as a valid asset with financial institutions, there was no opportunity to leverage that wealth. So we were the first U.S.-based company to be able to offer leverage solutions for holders of crypto assets. We started with Bitcoin and Ether, and we've expanded to Litecoin, Doge, and just this week we've added Dash.
Okay. And I did overhear you talking with someone at your booth, and you actually mentioned that there was Dash Masternode capabilities. So I was wondering, and I found that to be very fascinating. So I was wondering if you could maybe expand upon that a little bit. Can you tell people a little bit more about maybe what like a security token even is? Because there's probably a lot of people, even people probably who are even here who are in this space who don't know what it is, let alone there's probably a lot of people listening to us who maybe don't know about crypto. And can you maybe tell us a little bit more about what a security token is?
Yeah, I think the trick is to kind of separate the words, actually. You know, I and a lot of other people kind of combine it. But the reality is that you look at what is a token, right? If you've created a token, and let's just assume that, you know, your audience knows what a token is, so let's focus more on the security part of it, right? If you created a token, you've just created a digital representation of something, right? And it's got certain rights and attributes to it, right? And that's the token, right? The trick is, when is a token a security token, or when is a token that's not a security token sold in a manner that makes it a securities offering, even though it's, you know, fundamentally not a security token, right? So an example would be something like, if I play this online video game with you, and the manufacturer creates gems for us to buy and trade with each other in order to sell to buy equipment, right? Like a sword or something like that, right? In general, most people don't think of that as a securities, right? So if they are selling those gems, no one goes down and says, you sold illegal securities offerings. On the other hand, if they took that exact same thing and they sold it, and when they sold it, buy gems, they could increase in value, and you might be able to resell gems for more money later, then now they've given people this idea that, oh, they're gonna make money off it. And if you cross off enough checks where it sounds like, feels like, smells like an investment, or like the idea that you're selling someone the idea that they're making an investment, then you've crossed into securities world. And in that case, you could have a token that's not a securities be a securities offering, right? And what is a security, right? In a nutshell, in most cases, you know, instead of kind of the technical legal jargon that most people give you, I like to just say, like, look, if it feels like someone's investing because they hope they're going to get money, it probably is going to be a security, right? And it's one of those things where you know it when you see it. Like, you know it feels like a security when something feels like it is, you know.
Why would anybody want to buy Bitcoin inside their IRA? I mean, the whole point of Bitcoin was to have peer-to-peer electronic cash. So why are you going to have a financial intermediary buy Bitcoin for you? Why don't you just cash out your 401k, cash out your IRA, cash out your retirement plan, and just buy Bitcoin on your own? Well, the reason for that is if somebody had January 1st, 2017, invested $100,000 into Bitcoin, and then 1 year later, they would have had, after taxes and the 10% penalty, they would have just under $900,000. So you would have turned $100,000 into close to $900,000. So you're obviously doing something right. However, there is a better way that they could have done it. What they could have done is they could have done a Roth conversion. With a Roth conversion, you save the 10% penalty, so you've got 10% more that could be invested into crypto. And the beauty of this is that now all of your gains are now forever tax-free. So you put the $100,000 in, and now, again, you're getting out of paying the 10% penalty, and now after even all my management fees, you now have a little over $1 million. We have all the exact specific numbers linked down or should be on the screen right now. I don't have it memorized, but, you know, to me, you know, $1 million sounds a little bit better than $900,000, and having tax-free gains forever sounds better than having $900,000 that now any appreciation or hopeful potential appreciation would then be subject to tax. And the other reason why we thought of this, or really the genesis of this, is I had heard a lot of people doing this, and I thought that, hey, there's got to be a better way. But the main reason is you've got a lot of people who the only money they have to invest is inside of their retirement accounts. A lot of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. I mean, even people who have million-dollar IRAs, a lot of them don't have actual extra money to invest. They don't have rainy day funds. And the rainy day funds should be kept in actual safe, liquid, you know, basically cash or really short-term treasury bills. It shouldn't be invested into Bitcoin. And so a lot of people just don't have that extra money to invest. And so taking a small percentage of your IRA or 401k and then, you know, putting it into Bitcoin, if you know what you're doing and you understand the risk and you actually believe in this philosophically, is actually, I think, you know, a good move to make. So again, if you're going to pull money out of your 401k to buy Bitcoin, you should talk to myself, because I think that the Roth IRA conversion is a much better way of doing things. And that is why somebody would want to consider having Bitcoin inside their IRA as opposed to cashing out their 401k and just buying it outright.
Okay, well, that's great. You've got people who have IRAs and 401ks, and you know, there's different things you can do or that I can do to help them out. But what about the person that has maybe a few million dollars of gains and they bought it on Coinbase or Kraken, or they got several millions of dollars of gains and all of a sudden now you want to go buy your Lambo or buy a new house? I mean, there's no way you're going to be able to skirt around the IRS, because they're going to wonder, you know, hey, how'd you get that $500,000 to buy a new house? Well, for those people, probably the best person to explain this is actually my friend Ernest Hancock, as he was giving me an introduction at Anarchapoco. Anyways, I'll let Ernie take it away, because we can also have advanced trust strategies for the people that have millions of dollars of gains. This is not just for people who are looking to invest parts of their IRAs or 401ks.
A good friend of mine, Tim Pachote, he's a financial advisor at Scottsdale. He'll be speaking at the TDV event. You'd be able to bring the crypto into the system. How would you be able to do a foundation, a trust, a this, a that, and so on? And Tim was at the party. I go, Tim, what up? He's been spending months that he's getting ready to present to you guys Monday on how you can take your crypto and not pay capital gains on it, not have taxes on it. I'm going, man, you need to talk to Tim.